Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch the Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Mr. IVEST, sort of. I'm the Dude.
And I'm Grim. And today we are hoping to deliver some good news for people who love bad news by none other than Modest Mouse.
Tell you what it really is. It's good news for people who love Scratch the Track.
Yeah, I hope it is. I mean, yeah, you know, I really hope it is.
You're probably having a hell of a day, and it's only going to get better in these next, let's say, 35 to 45 minutes.
Ideally, so, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, Tribby, dude. So their fourth studio album released April 6, 2004. Now, I remember when this came out, we were in college, and, you know, I was a late bloomer when it came to A Lonesome Crowded West. I know you had been listening to him for a little bit, and you had... Did you want to give a shout-out here? Maybe a little shout-out?
Oh, yeah, to Mr. Alex Furta. He was the man who got me into Modest Mouse with that very album, The Lonesome Crowded West, and then Moon in Antarctica. And I don't know. I thought it was an interesting and cool time for this to come out, because it's nice when a band releases something like once you get into them,
right?
You know,
right?
It's not like when you started listening to Led Zeppelin and that was just not a possibility.
Yeah, you know? Right, right. You know, you had the whole catalog was already out.
Yeah,
you know, So, but yeah, man, when this came out, I mean, I remember, you know, you had talked about Modest Mouse and the band and everything, and I think we'd listened to them probably at work on many of our breaks. While we were just being available.
Or just during the,
And yeah, I know a lot of people, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say, maybe you would. Was this album somewhat controversial in a sense of, I know a lot of people who were the early diehard fans were like, oh, all of a sudden it's poppy. Their song's on the radio. Yep. It's not the same underground cool band that we knew it to be. And I think there's certainly some truth to that.
Oh, for sure.
There were hits. They were on the radio and they were poppy. They were catchy. They had music videos. This was a whole, you know, area they'd never really been in before. And, you know, it is very different. But if you look at this album as a whole, there's some songs that are not overly radio friendly too. Yeah,
correct.
They're not unit shifters.
Yeah, but it's interesting though, because I mean, aside from not counting the actual numbers of as if they would appear on a CD or something, but the first three actual songs are probably about as poppy as they had ever sounded.
Yes.
Ever. So I'm sure that had to row a lot of people the wrong way, just because, you know, Moon in Antarctica was a little spacey, you know, and I don't know if people assumed or thought or prognosticated that they would go in this direction.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing is, though, is like, you know, you had Lonesome Crowded West. You have Moon in Antarctica. Dude, those albums are both insanely different from each other.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you go from this to, or Moon in Antarctica to Good News. And, you know, I will say, like, you just basically said those first three songs. I mean, we are skipping the horn intro track, which
also I think would have been unexpected. Now, I think that's really cool. And I love how they use that sort of as a device that comes back to... Which we'll get to a theory that I have on that in a minute or in a couple minutes.
Theorieth?
Yeah.
The theorieth guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, I think also if you look, I mean, we'll get into those tracks individually, but the sound just of those tracks, right? The poppiness, but also, dude, like Isaac Brock isn't just like shouting or screaming or anything, you know, it's just a very different feel and sound.
Yeah, but at the same time, there's things that, although they might not have some of the heavier, loud, crunchy guitars, they still have that incredible amount of rawness to them. And I just like that there was sort of a shift or a change in this into making those sort of textures without overly electronic or electric instruments.
Sure.
I'm looking at you, this devil's workday. But you know what I mean? It's like you kind of get that raw nastiness with a more completely acoustic based setup. It's just an interesting thing to do. Now, not to say that that's indicative of everything, because there's a lot of things that do have that, but it was different, I think, at least from any of the stuff, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. There's still raw dog in it, right?
Oh. Like, for sure. Breaking out through.
Dude, I shoot raw.
Yeah.
You and Jared. So, yeah. Jared Poland, froknowsphoto.com. Well, you know, the first thing I didn't realize this, but that, you know, Jeremiah Green did not perform on this album. That was interesting. That was like news to me. I just kind of assumed he did because
and not necessarily good time, news.
No, for people who like good news or bad news. I mean, it's no good news there. It sounds like he, I don't know, may have gotten the help or whatever that he needed. And because he did join the band after the album came out, I think when we saw him on tour, he may have been the drummer.
I'm not sure. I guess I didn't very closely look at the dates and then try to think of it, but it's really possible. Yeah. I mean, based on everything, and by the time they would have wanted to go on tour,
right?
But yeah, that is in. I don't know. Did they go? Were they on tour at one point with two drummers?
Actually, I think when we saw them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Yeah, there were two drummers. Yeah. Well, you know, and we would also be remiss, too, though, to say that, you know, Jeremiah Green did pass away on, I just saw the date, December 31st, 2022, sadly. So, you know, he was one of the founding members. And, you know, Isaac Brock even said, he was like, man, I was like kind of devastated by that because, you know, not only is that a friend, but you're seeing, you know, a friend struggle, but it's also a bandmate, you know, going through essentially, I believe it was a bipolar disorder. Mm. You know, seeing that happen, he had like some, I think some people said he had a nervous breakdown, but like one of the stories was, it was like they were playing, he got frustrated, cause he couldn't get it right. And then he was, you know, just started shouting and screaming at everyone and then basically just left for a couple of months. And, you know, and he even was, I guess, admitted to the mental wing of a hospital at some point.
But okay.
It sounds like he straightened things out because he was able to join the band, you know, a few months later or whatever. And, you know, they continued to make a whole string of albums.
And I think this was noted as the only one that he didn't appear on, if I'm not correctly.
I believe so. Like if you look at their,
I mean,
you
know, their, yeah, up to
their tracker on, there's just that little period,
little gap, yeah,
on the bar, yeah, yeah, where Benjamin, I don't know how to say his name, Weichel,
yeah. Now, obviously, dude did a good job because I mean, now maybe this would be different if you were a super diehard fan and a drummer. Maybe you said to yourself, something's off here. It's not the same.
Yeah,
I didn't notice that, but I guess I wasn't really looking for it.
Yeah, I think, well, also the thing with this album, too, is I think, you know, it does have a lot of that rawness, but I think the overall feel and sound of the album changed enough where I think there was like a shift. So that could sort of been masked a little bit by, you know, sort of the I don't want to say change in genre, but style, right?
Yeah, like, to some degree.
You know, so, but yeah, pretty much like after that, you know, he left the band, I guess they rented like this, I don't know if it was, I think he had left, Green was there. So they had rented a house in Portland to like work on the album and everybody thought, oh, it's going to be great. You know, we're going to just like live there and work on music 24/7. And then it didn't turn out that way. They were having a hard time being focused and people were just doing different stuff. But then after Jeremiah left and they started working with the other, you know, the other drummer, you know, they went down to Mississippi, and
was that Mississippi? Where this? I know they were. Oh yeah, and then they apparently Oxford, worked at another one in Memphis. So that was interesting to me because I always associate them with the Pacific Northwest, and and you know, not that it matters, I guess, but it was just not what I would have expected for where it was recorded.
Yeah, and I'm sure our fans will definitely correct us if we're wrong here, but didn't they do, I thought they recorded Moon in Antarctica, or a lot of it, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Remember we talked about that, and there was a fight, or like, you know, something.
Yeah, he got his jaw shut.
Yeah, broken it, and yeah, it got wired shut and everything because he got in a fight with some dudes across the way. But so the way I kind of heard it was, you know, so they go down to Mississippi to Dennis Herring's recording studio. Who I guess, dude, I mean, worked with some prominent artists. I don't know him, did not know him as a producer, but had worked with, you know, reputable bands, the Counting Crows, Buddy Guy, Ben Folds, Elvis Costello, like, you know,
yes,
those are notable people. Ever heard of them?
And it sounds like they kind of had a difficult go at first.
A little bit. Yeah.
Which I don't know. I wonder if ultimately that kind of helped shape some of these different things or not, but it's an interesting little nugget anyways.
Yeah. Well, because I'm curious if he was set to produce the album like in Portland, or if they just decided, hey, we're gonna come to Mississippi, we're gonna work with this producer there. Like at what point that decision was made, if they had some sort of a prior relationship. I couldn't find out, you know, there's not a ton of information that is out there about this and sort of the recording process. But yeah, basically, like Isaac said, he, you know, kind of took a more of a firmer grasp of not only the songs but the band and how he worked with the band and
yeah,
produce them and everything. But you know, he also said at the end, hey, he was really the best person for the job, and it turned out great, and I can't really complain about the production of this album. So
yeah, I do like it because in many ways it's really polished but kind of raw at the same time.
Yeah,
it's interesting.
I imagine your ranking of Modest Mouse albums, this falls around the 3 range.
yeah, I'd say that's pretty close.
But you put Moon in Antarctica above Lonesome Crowded West?
No.
No? Okay. I thought you did. Okay. All right. Yeah. Oh, I'm Crowded West.
Ouch.
I thought I knew him. I guess not. How dare you?
Now,
go ahead.
I don't know, and it doesn't really say a whole lot, but was this the first one that they did on Epic, which was a more major label or not?
Moon in Antarctica was.
Okay, because...
Yeah. Yeah, I did look that up. Because I kind of thought maybe that could be the case, too.
Yeah sure. No, that's all I was going to say, is that you'd make a strong correlation to that, but yeah.
Right. And you could see why more fans and people would be maybe a little turned off. Oh, they're at a, you know, this big label now, and they're putting out hit singles and all this stuff. And well, that, you know, that wasn't the case. So, but anyways.
Before we go into the tracks, dude, do have to say, one reason I was not able to hold this up is because it's 49 minutes, dude. You could have easily made that a single vinyl. I just don't get it. I don't get it. And the funny thing is it's set up so nicely to flip right after Bukowski, because then that's number one. If you look in terms of numbers, I don't know about time, it's got to be close, but that is the direct middle. So there's that. And then you have the horn intro to start the first side and the horn intro to start the second side. I just don't know why you wouldn't have done that. It makes it so much more of a cohesive sort of experience, I think, my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I do have it on vinyl, and I couldn't have told you, to be honest, if it was one disc or two, but I guess it's two, huh?
Everything that because I looked at that, of course, and kind of today just looking up on it, and I just don't understand that. Like, it was just about handed to you on a platter. It, like, the kind that's heavy and it spins. But
exactly.
Anyways.
Well, so Should we get into the tracks here?
I think so.
Okay.
This will be a long one. Horn intro.
Horn intro. But, you know, I mean, it's the obvious scratch. I don't think so. Why? Okay, that's fair. One thing I'll say is, man, you be careful if you have the volume in your car, like, turned up too loud and this comes on. I'm sure I've done that once or twice.
It's a little jarring.
If they had started with the world at large, it certainly wouldn't be as jarring.
Yeah.
But we do get the horn intro. And it is cool because, I'm trying to think. On their previous albums, do they use a lot of brass? Not that I can really.
Especially
pick out.
Not here like this.
Prominent. Like it's, yeah. Yeah. Not like this for sure.
I'm surprised someone hasn't sampled that or like one of the chords, because it just seems like something that you could do a cool thing with. But so then kind of going, well, now we're going to go into the pop portion.
Track number two, The World at Large. I mean, it's funny because the horn intro is very jarring, but then we get this kind of nice, very soft and slow way to sort of start the album. The way he's singing, is very pleasant and everything. Yeah, you're like, this is not. I can see why maybe some people would have been turned off by that, especially even getting through the first couple of songs, why some people would have been like, oh, yeah, I don't know about this. I mean, they, I think make up for it in some ways. But still.
Well, and I think, okay, so Float On, I think, is obviously the next one and a good segue, because I think it sort of takes some of that pop sensibility, but you get a little bit more, I think, of definitely the way Isaac Brock would normally sing in it.
Yeah.
But it still has sort of the way the guitar is played, and it still is just kind of a poppy feel, and that's not to say that that's a bad thing, just, you know.
Yeah, and it doesn't have, I mean, you know, it's got a cool little catchy riff too, right? With very little like distortion or anything like that.
And
right? There's
a couple times where he says something, he puts in that, like a sound effect, which you kind of, that's, the fans couldn't have been too upset about that.
It is cool. I mean, you know, pretty much, you know, he's, even what he's singing about, he's laying like all these bad things that happen, you know, or can happen kind of just throughout a day or your life or whatever. And it's like, oh, well, I'm just going to float on, you know, it's just kind of like keep going and whatever. But, you know, this was like the first single, and it was, you know, had a music video and everything. So it was very, very different for them. And kind of, you know, on one hand, dude, here's the thing. It's like, you know, you love these bands, you love their music, you love what they do, and you're like, oh man, I don't know. Like, you want them to do well, you want them to be successful.
Yeah, but, right? But then when they get it,
it's like, well, man, sell out, like, you know, and it's just not, so, I don't know, it's a double-edged sword, man, double-edged sword.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Ocean Breeze Salty, I think, to me, is definitely kind of poppy at times, but it has a certain somberness to it that I like in the way it's delivered. This was always one that is on the top of my list for this album, even though it was one of the singles.
It kind of has like a big sound to it, like right off the bat when it comes in. It's just
like bang, the ocean, you know?
yeah, like the ocean. Breathing Salty. Now, dude, there's an organ in there that I hear is, and I'm just trying to figure out what it was. Was it? It does this weird sound. It sounds like I don't know if it's a Wurlitzer or what, but there's like this weird, just whatever the sound it's doing.
They said
really interesting.
They credit Eric. Oh, that's on three. Oh, never mind then. I guess I'm not exactly sure. I would assume it's some sort of organ with just the like if it was a Hammond, there's certain tone bars that you'd pull down because it's not like the straight harmonics you're hearing. It's like the thirds and the, you know, some of the other ones. So that's what I would assume, but I don't know. because, like I said, Eric Judy was credited with a Mellotron, but that was in Float On. So I was thinking they were using the flute setting or something for a second with just a little beefiness, but I don't know.
Beefy.
Yeah.
So then we go to track number 5 with Dig Your Grave, a little trippy kind of intro. But I feel like this is like, yeah, we're getting a little more edge, a little more rawness here.
Well, yes.
It's kind of like your classic sort of, you know, what you would expect a little bit more out of like a Modest Mouse track.
Especially with what he says, too, because he's just like, I hope you're dead. It's kind of dark.
I hope you're dead. Yeah. But I always, you know, this is essentially an intro for Bury Me With It.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always I thought the opening guitar riff is really dirty.
How you would have expected them to go, I think. Because I know.
Yeah.
I know Mr. Alex, when this came out, was not as into it, but he was like, I really like Bury Me With It.
Yeah, right. The way he sings, dude. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's more coarse. He's, you know, singing with attitude. He's not trying to be, I guess, as harmonious.
great lyrics, though.
You know, some great lyrics. Dude, and that's one of the things I think that, you know, separates Isaac Brock from a lot of musicians and a lot of writers. It's like, dude, we were aiming for the moon. We were shooting at the stars, but the kids were just shooting at the buses and the cars.
Yeah.
Don't drink the water. Don't breathe the air. And then he's like, well, the point was fast, but it was too blunt to miss. Life handed us a paycheck, and we said we worked harder than this.
Yeah, like, that's pretty good.
Oh my gosh, he is really poetic when it comes to a lot of. And what's great, he's poetic in such just like a cynical, pissed off way. Mm-hmm. Like he, the things that he connects and puts together are just really exceptional.
Yeah.
Really exceptional.
Now,
track number 7, Dance Hall.
Yeah. I never really understood this one.
Yeah, I didn't either. I like the feel of the song and the sound, but I guess I don't get a lot out of it. I think lyrically, it rocks. I really like the, you know, there's the, what do you call it? Sort of like this, I guess, little solo that's kind of clean.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking with the way the guitar is just real jagged and kind of, I didn't know if that was some sort of a nod to like reggae, like the shub kind of called Dance Hall. Because there's, you know.
Dance hall. Yeah. Every day I'm going to dance hall.
So, I don't know, but, today was the first time I really thought about that.
Yeah. I'll let you win the argument if things don't go my way.
See, I don't even know what he says in it except for dance.
Dude, a lot. Yeah, you really have to look at the words sometimes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Especially with the way he sings. But,
yeah.
Now, when I heard this album, like other than like the hits, Bukowski was like, I think the first song I was like, man, yeah, dude, this one's sweet.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I fucked up the last line.
And again, pretty, pretty acoustic based. You know,
absolutely.
I think almost the whole
banjo
thing,
man, yeah. Sweet, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think it adds a certain sort of darkness to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I couldn't say why, but
it's like this folky darkness. Mm-hmm. There's it just the kind of the beat, it kind of just kind of hops along a little bit.
Yeah, like a horse.
Like a horse.
Yeah.
Yeah. But dude, even like he does this thing, man, where it's like you know, we always like the Isaac Brock vocals where he's like way in the back
yelling
and everything.
Yes.
And in this one though, he's not. Well, I don't know if it's as yelling as he usually does, but he's like doubling his vocals a lot throughout the song.
But it sounds like he's got like a megaphone a little farther away.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It sounds a little different than how we're used to hearing it, like on Lonesome Crowded West and some of his other tracks. But it's weird because it's like he's kind of like doubling what he's saying, but he doesn't always like say the same thing. It's almost like he's just like messing around a little bit too.
Now, the sound and the feel of this, to me, just kind of gets sped up as you go into This Devil's Workday, because it's almost like the same instrumentation.
Right.
And And it's well, but you add some brass too. But you've already had.
Well, we start
brass.
With that horn intro, exactly. Just like the intro. Now, so are you saying this is where you'd start disc two?
No question.
Yeah,
side two,
yeah.
Side two,
or side two, not disc two, side two, and that makes a lot of sense too. Because, dude, it would be funny because essentially, man, like. What if they didn't mark it like A or B? Yeah. You know, you just put it on. You still wouldn't know like right away, right? You'd be like, is it going to go into the world at large or is Devil's Work Day going to start?
Yeah. But, it's actually kind of cool. They should do that.
Yeah. But yeah, dude, this is, I mean, again, this song has that kind of grittier, dirtier sound, mm-hmm. right? That you know, you would kind of expect to hear a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so, but yeah, get the, it's kind of a strange song too, though, man. It's yep. like, it, I don't know. It feels almost like the way when I was listening to it, I was like, dude, it feels like it's some sort of like a sing along on like a pirate ship or like if you're like in some sort of a tavern or, you know, during like those times, right? Yeah. And like it would be playing there. I don't know, man. It's just kind of.
Yeah, I can see that.
It goes against the poppiness for sure. So,
but now you kind of go back to that electronic or not electronic. That's really the wrong word. Electric feel. With the view.
Ding 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 ding. Ding. Dude, I've always liked this song. I like just kind of the. It's really upbeat and it just kind of rocks, man. They just kind of get to go and great words too.
I like that they put some little synth rips in there. That's also okay. Nice. And they got a little of the, you know,
yeah,
plenty
a little bit,
of those. But
yeah. Yeah.
We He's got like, the land, but they got the view.
Yeah. Right. I know. That's what I was going to say. Your gun went off. Well, you know, we shot off your mouth and look where it got you. My mouth runs on two shots from both sides. We got the land, but they got the, but dude, one thing I love is when he does the pow, 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 you know, like he puts that in himself.
Yeah.
Like it's so cool, dude. Yeah. It's so cool when he does that. Satin in a coffin. We get a little more banjo on this too.
Yeah, you're kind of going back a little bit to that.
Yeah. Now the one thing I don't want to say it's a ripoff, but this has the same feel and beat as 5-1 by the Doors. If you listen to these songs, like it has that that, you know, just that kind of rhythm and everything.
Somebody should do a mashup of those. That would be good.
Maybe you should do a mashup of those.
Yeah, we'll see. Yep. I'm sure I'll fit that in.
Are you dead or are you sleeping? God, I sure hope you're dead.
Oh, one thing I was going to say is, okay, so which, because there's an interesting lyrical theme. I think it starts in this one where he says, all that icing and all that, or no, it's in Bukowski.
That's in Bukowski.
Where he says, all that icing and all that cake, I couldn't make it to your wedding. But then in Satin in a Coffin, there's another reference to that where he says, I ate that wedding cake until the whole damn thing was gone.
Was gone. Which, yeah, is that what he says?
Okay. Yeah, and I just thought it was interesting. I don't know if, there's any sort of spillover or whatever, connection? But it's
a concept album. That's it.
It sounds like there album. Is. It must have been a hell of a wedding.
Yeah, hell of a wedding. Definitely. I mean, dude, this is going to be like a what would you call it? A concept series, because, you know, the next thing we're going to do is Radiohead's Hail to the Thief, and there's Punch Up at a Wedding. So yeah. It's like, I mean,
yeah. Songs are the same thing.
Exactly. Then we go to Interlude Milo.
Your favorite.
Which it's a trippy little interlude, right? It's, you know, it's a fun little accordion playing, and you have like, it sounds like a baby like in the water a little bit or something like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And now here's what my thoughts about that is.
Okay.
I don't think they told you if they were boys or girls or when exactly they were born. But I believe his first child was born in 2002.
Okay.
So it's.
And this is.
I just wonder if
Milo.
I that is something that I would probably guess next. And
super fans out there, please let us.
Yeah, and I would also conjecture to say that perhaps that is a recording of such child.
It really makes sense, dude. That's not too far of a stretch. It's really not. And if we're wrong, dude, if we're wrong, I'm just going to blame it on the Tetons.
Yeah.
I'm just going to blame it on the Tetons.
Yeah, but please, you know, let us know when you...
Like, subscribe, and comment below.
Yeah, Blame It on the Tetons is, it's just a really nice, kind of consistent, pleasant song. Acoustic guitar and piano, and it really stays consistent kind of throughout. Again, I think some good lines. All them eager actors gladly take the credit for the lines created by the people tucked away from sight.
Yeah.
And then also, language is the liquid that we're all dissolved in. Great for solving problems after it creates a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just talk it out. Talk it out.
But it's funny. I mean, you know, yeah. I know I'm very guilty of my mouth getting me in trouble and then having to.
Pow, 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 pow. Yeah. Well, you got the land and they got the view.
Yeah. Now, one thing about Blame It on the Tetons.
Okay.
The guitar riff kind of reminds me of Trailer Trash a little bit, but like a slower.
Okay.
Because there's that dissonant chord that sort of hangs off at the end.
Sure. Yeah. So. I could hear that.
Yeah.
Now, what about Black Cadillac?
You know, it starts off kind of slower with some harmonics, but yeah, it really picks up.
This song has a lot of peaks and valleys. I mean, there's a lot of ups.
Well, honestly, yeah, I could argue the same thing. It's interesting that they put this in One Chance right next to each other because, in my opinion, they both do that. They both start fairly slow, and then
I feel like to me, Black Cadillacs is maybe I put a little more on the abrasive side. Like One Chance, there's. With One Chance, I don't know if we want to just go into it. That's to me, that's a little more. I don't know if sympathetic or empathetic.
Yeah.
I don't know what the right, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like it's kind of, it's almost you're just looking back on stuff a little bit, looking forward and looking back, and be like, you know, because we've all said that, man. Man, we got one chance
to make everything
you
know, right.
You do, yeah. You do think about your friends. You do think about your habits.
Yeah.
You do think about your family, and you know. They probably all do mean a lot to you. So,
yeah.
But I've always really liked One Chance. That's just always been a cool song. And, but it does go up and down a little bit. Like it starts off slow and then he even says like boom or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's when it like boom, like it really hits pretty hard. And I even think, dude, I think you could end the album with this song, but I love The Good Times Are Killing
Me. I do
man.
Too. I like the talking in the studio sounds like.
Yeah. Can we smoke in here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like it's a, I almost feel like it's like a fun song that they, and I have no reason to base this off of, but I can just see them like being in the studio or just kind of fucking around a little bit. You know what I mean? And just like, you know, I don't know, just messing around and not trying to make it a serious song.
Yeah.
But then it kind of turns into that. Like I could just, you know, see it in that way. I'm not really sure why, but
now what do you think about the additional personnel on that song? I would really like to know what was played.
Oh, I didn't see the additional personnel.
It credits the Flaming Lips with additional instrumentation.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh, that's cool.
I had no idea, but that's interesting. I'd really like to know what, you know.
Maybe they just stopped by the studio that day. They were in the neighborhood. Because I think they were on a, I thought I saw they were on a tour together around this time. Maybe it was after this.
That would have been a good one to see.
Jeremiah joined him again. Yeah, that would have been pretty sweet. But yeah, it's funny, man. Like, dude, this, you know, this track's just about having fun, living the
too
good
much
life
fun.
And too much fun, man.
But kind of realizing it.
Which is important,
yeah.
Right? You know, but even like, you know, I think one of the lines he says, enough hair of the dog to make myself an entire rug, man.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, dude. It's like, dude, you're just not stopping. It's
yeah.
Like, well, you're just going to keep it rolling, right? Just going to keep it rolling.
Oof, yeah.
So, so grim.
Here's my question to you.
Okay.
Are the horn intro, Dig Your Grave, and Milo excluded? from scratch.
No. Okay. Yeah, I don't count those as tracks essentially, because the horn intro, it's an intro for a world at.
Oh, so you're saying those are excluded from the scratching?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I don't think so. I kind of. Yeah. Yeah. So I think we need to scratch a little deeper,
man. Yeah. I gotta reevaluate.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding. I'm good.
Yeah, I think I'm probably pretty good to go if you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. You going or am I going?
You can go.
Okay. So, it was between a couple, but I won't tell you the second one until after I hear yours, because I have some reasoning where I'm going to go into this one first. I'm going to scratch Black Cadillacs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just, I don't know, you know, it's a fine song, but it just doesn't necessarily really do it for me. I know it is a little different, a little raw, which I think probably a lot of the original, you know, early fans would like and want more of in this album. But we're already stretching. I mean, even with we'll just take out the three tracks that we're not even scratching. We're at 13 songs. So this album is full. It has plenty of content, you know, and I'm not going to say it's bloated, but I just think, I don't know. I could probably do without that one and go from Blame It on the Tetons right to One Chance.
Okay. So, that'd be an interesting transition, honestly.
Yeah. What do you got?
Dude, it's just dance hall.
Okay, I figured
it. I was thinking this. There was some, once we took out the three low hangers, I felt like there was a very strong possibility of going into OT, but did not.
See, I think the thing that I, even though I don't know what the hell he's saying half the time, I do like the energy and the pacing and all that. Like, I do like that about the song. The one that you kind of sort of like talked me out of a little bit was actually probably going to be The Devil's Workday.
Oh,
because, but I rethought it because I was like, man, that's a great way to start side two if they were going to do it like that.
Dude,
you know,
why have they not? I don't get it. It's like it was made to do it. Well, I guess with that, no OT. Let us know below what you would scratch and why.
And why. And if you guys have not checked out our previous episodes on The Lonesome Crowded West and Moon in Antarctica, you should definitely do that, because they're a lot of fun. And we're having fun talking about it. And we even did a First Impressions or whatever their most recent album one is as well. So we got a handful of Modest Mouse stuff out there. So
probably, if you're
fans, like, subscribe, and comment more below.
That we can't even remember right now. So I think about what wraps it up there, Grim. What do you say?
Yeah, time to go.
Time to go on the Grim and Dude Show. I fucked up the last line.
Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Tims. Copyright 2023. The Dude and Grim Show.